questions related to what I'm missing. Sen's eyes became distant, and she flexed her fingers. Other than you, there's not much positive. Ifrit feels more like a missing limb or a security blanket. But Faye? Anything else I think about? I don't feel that I need my missing memories to be happy.
Nathan scratched his head. Could he disagree with her? He wanted to. Everything about this situation troubled him.
I want to move forward, Nathan, Sen said. Can we leave it at that?
He sighed. Okay. Like I said, it's your choice.
Good, Sen smirked. You know, I get the feeling you need this sort of push often. A reminder to go with the flow, or to get back on track. Did I badger you like this before?
Not really. You were more timid, Nathan said, then frowned. You used Ifrit as an excuse to voice your opinions earlier.
Ah, well then, this should be fun for both of us.
Her eyes glimmered, and she bounced away to her designated spot in the magic circles.
If you overthink things, I'll bop you on the head. Fair?
I don't know if I agree to that, Nathan replied slowly.
Too bad.
Her hand glowed, and she did a slapping motion in the air. A small force struck Nathan upside the head, just strong enough to irritate him. He glared at Sen. She giggled and said nothing. Let's get this show on the road, Nathan mumbled, and made the final preparations for the summoning. Minutes passed as Nathan slowly poured magic into the summoning circle. The salt glowed, then smoldered. A thin barrier of smoke rose from the salt. Nathan smelled nothing, but the air felt charged with magic. An overbearing presence appeared to enter the room, as if the air itself was expanding and pushing against his body. The salt burst into flames, and the haze from the smoke and heat became thick enough to be a shield between Nathan and whatever was in the circle. That was the sign Nathan had been waiting for. He stopped pushing power into the outer circle and instead activated the inner circle. The candles flickered for a moment, then burst into meter-high torches. Smoke as black as soot pumped into the inner circle. An invisible barrier kept the smoke within the chalk summoning circle. The smoke spiraled together and congealed as it rose to the ceiling. A form slowly emerged from within the dark haze. Nathan licked his lips. All summoning rituals came with some risk, but an Ifrit was a tremendously powerful being. Summoning rituals tended to be similar in process. The summoner opens a bridge to the spirit world, using himself as an anchor and magical power as construction materials. That was it. Everything else was about controlling the bridge. Where does it go? Who can use it? How big is it? Most importantly, the ritual circles also prevented the summoned spirit from escaping the circle once summoned. While a genie, a race of spirits that Ifrits were part of, couldn't exist in Domar long without a host, there was nothing to stop the Ifrit from forcibly seizing a host. A mistake in this ritual could be more devastating than the coming demonic assault. Hence why Nathan used two circles. The inner circle was the bridge. The outer circle attempted to constrain the Ifrit once summoned. Two burly arms emerged from the smoke, each covered in ruby-red scales the size of Nathan's head. The Ifrit's skin was craggy, like the side of a mountain, and thin glowing cracks ran across it like magma veins. A demonic head emerged, its maw dripping with liquid fire that spread embers across the room. Two horns as long as Sen jutted upward, and glowing red veins could be seen within them. The smoke sank to the ground and swirled around the base of the Ifrit. The spirit hovered in the air of the room, its horns nearly scraping the room's ceiling. Size-wise, the Ifrit stood easily twice Nathan's height. But this wasn't its full height. The Ifrit had legs that were hidden within the smoke. Presumably, the Ifrit had determined that it couldn't fit inside the room at full height, and had compromised by only showing its upper half. Not that it needed the bottom half to be intimidating.
Foolish mortals, you dare to summon the great Ifrit,
the Ifrit boomed.
I have no time for the petty trials and tribulations you waste your fleeting lives on. Tell me your purpose here, and I will deign to consider your proposals.
Sen stared up at Ifrit. Her body shook as she tried to meet his fiery gaze. Ifrit's eyes were like pits into hell, and his presence overtook the room. Moments passed. Ifrit hovered, still silent, and flexed his claws. Sen gulped and looked at Nathan for help.
Can we skip past the melodrama? Nathan asked, desperately trying to keep his tone light, despite his inner worries. We all know why you're here and what we want. It's not like you have anywhere better to be.
Sen's eyes transformed into dinner plates. Ifrit turned his head and glared at Nathan, his eyes narrowing.
Must you ruin one of my few guilty pleasures?
Ifrit said, crossing his arms. They were thick enough to imitate tree trunks.
The summoning is an important moment for me to impress upon people my power.
Sure, but we kind of already know about your power. I wouldn't have summoned you if I didn't, Nathan said.
You're not one for parties, are you?
Ifrit asked. The booming timbre of his voice had settled, and now made him sound like a grumbling old man.
I've half a mind to leave and make you respect the next genie you summon.
Really? Leave, go back, and do what? Play cards for the next several decades in the spirit world?
Nathan taunted.
I have some wonderful friends. It's not so bad.
Excuse me, but what the hell? Sen burst out.
Nathan and Ifrit looked back at Sen. Sensing a chance to regain his earlier momentum, Ifrit let out a deep cough.
Well, little mortal, have you dwelt upon your innermost desires and come to your conclusion? For what purpose have you summoned me?
Ifrit said. Sen stared at him. Her eyes narrowed.
This is just theater, isn't it? You talked like a normal person to Nathan, but now you sound like somebody from a folk tale. Do you think this is funny?
No, I feel that it's fun, Ifrit replied.
He sighed and stared at the ceiling for several seconds.
Very well. If you prefer it, I shall get to the point. Why do you want my power, human?
Well, I want to fight for Nathan, and—
Your bastion may want you to fight for him, but is that what you truly want?
Ifrit's gaze bore down on Sen. She shrunk in on herself and looked to Nathan for support. In response, Ifrit flung a claw out toward Nathan.
Do not intervene, Bastion. I will hear her answer. You Bastions are predictable. I don't need to hear your reasons, only hers.
Sen swallowed, closed her eyes, and fell silent for nearly a minute. When she opened her eyes, they were filled with the determination that Nathan expected to see from her, even if she had always been too scared in his timeline to show it so openly.
What I told you is exactly what I want, Sen repeated.
Why? Ifrit asked.
Because I want to support him. He supports me right now, even though my power as a spellblade is too weak to compare to his champions. And I can't become a champion easily. I'm already talented at fire element sorcery. With you, I can become a worthy partner of Nathan's, Sen said.
Ifrit considered Sen silently. After several seconds, he turned to face Nathan.
You are the summoner here. Have you explained the risks?
Ifrit asked. I have, he said, in detail.
And you still allow her to do this?
Ifrit's voice hadn't changed, but Nathan knew he was being judged. Before Nathan could answer, Sen cut in.
It's my decision, Sen said. The effects on my body, the restraints on my sorcery, the unaging, the need to live with you in my mind at all times. It's my choice, not yours, not Nathan's.
Ifrit chuckled. Not my choice? You realize I'm going to be bound to you until your demise, yes?
And what else will you do? Sen smirked. Go back to the spirit world and play cards for the next several decades? This is my choice. Deal with it.
Letting out a sigh, Ifrit turned fully toward Nathan.
She's a willful one. It's rare for me to possess somebody with such mental fortitude.
Nathan wasn't sure how to feel about that statement.
So you accept? Sen asked, her voice raising in pitch.
I thought you said it was your choice, Ifrit replied, amused. But I have one final question before I agree to the possession. You may feel that I will agree no matter your answer, but this ritual is an odd one.
The spirit leaned toward Nathan until his demonic visage hung only an arm's breadth away. The heat let off by Ifrit spilled across the summoning circle. Nathan broke out in a sweat. The barrier was supposed to keep Ifrit in. If his natural heat broke through, what else could?
Tell me, how and why did you summon me specifically?
Ifrit asked.
I can recall all circumstances relative to which I have given out my true name, and I do not believe you could know it.
Nathan gulped. Ifrit had asked the one question he'd hoped to avoid until after the possession, but he'd known it was highly likely to come up. Ifrit's name was not Ifrit. All spirits possess a true name, which they do not give out lightly. A sorcerer can use a true name to directly call upon a spirit, and the spirit must respond to their true name. The spirit can refuse any requests made, but they must always respond to a summons, and often the mere knowledge of their true name implies a level of trust. Knowing Ifrit's true name had allowed Nathan to summon the specific Ifrit that Sen had been possessed by in Nathan's timeline. Nathan trusted Ifrit, but he shouldn't know his true name. Ifrit had given it to him as a gesture of faith, to be used should the worst occur and Nathan need to summon another Ifrit again. Without those memories, it was natural for Ifrit to be curious and perhaps even upset. Taking a deep breath, Nathan decided upon the only answer he felt he could give. Ifrit would possess Sen shortly, regardless, and have his own answer.
You may not recall the circumstances, and you may not think I can know your true name.
But I remember, Nathan said, matching Ifrit's terrifying gaze. We've met before. Nothing more needed to be said. Even if Nathan tried to explain, the simple fact he knew Ifrit's name was proof that Ifrit had trusted him. Spirits were immortal. Not even a binding stone could slay them. No spirit could have their true name forced from them. Ifrit stood still for close to a minute. Nathan continued to sweat. Eventually, Ifrit said,
I see.
Nathan blinked.
You do?
Straightening up, Ifrit gave Nathan a sidelong glance.
I have existed since time immemorial. While I may not recall the birth of this world, I have knowledge of mysteries and wonders that nobody else has. You are a bastion. I know your magic well and the things it can do.
He did? Nathan never recalled Ifrit sharing this kind of information.
I don't remember any spirits ever speaking of binding stones, Nathan said. Because it would be dangerous to do so. You have sworn an oath to protect such knowledge, have you not?
Ifrit held a claw to his mouth, as if to symbolize silence.
I may not believe in the divinity of your goddess, but I know her power.
With that, Ifrit fell silent. Nathan took that as a sign that he had said enough.
Then you are satisfied? Nathan asked. I am. This will prove entertaining, Ifrit said.
That was the go-ahead to complete the ritual. Unlike the summoning itself, finalizing the possession was simple. Sen brushed aside some of the salt separating her from Ifrit. The wall of smoke that protected her from Ifrit vanished into nothingness, and she stood face to face with the spirit. Ifrit placed the tip of one of his claws against Sen's head. At that moment, Nathan activated the summoning circle again. The room flashed. Smoke churned about the room, thick, black, and acrid. The protective barrier of the summoning circle shattered, and Nathan instinctively reached for the power of the binding stone. No need, he realized as the smoke cleared within moments. Sen stood alone, unharmed. But she was possessed. Her green eyes had turned red. A single thick lock of her hair had turned white. No other visible changes had taken place, but Nathan could feel her presence in a way he couldn't earlier. She felt like Ifrit to his senses, an explosively powerful presence that drowned out almost everything else near it. Over the next minute, Ifrit's presence faded, as his power wasn't being actively used. Sen met his eyes and smiled. Nathan smiled back. She was still herself. Then Sen tilted her head and wandered over to the chalk summoning circle. She inspected the circle, mouthing things he couldn't make out.
Ha! Huh, you really did write his name down here, Sen said. That's a little rude. Although I don't have the slightest clue what it means, and Ifrit won't tell me. I get the feeling he was always like this.
She scowled.
Goddess, no wonder the two of you get along fine. He's as secretive an old bastard as you are.
Hey, Nathan said.
You're my secretive old bastard, if that helps.
Sen winked and caught Nathan in a hug. She froze.
Oh, that's super awkward.
What?
Ifrit reading my emotions. I kind of underestimated what it meant to let another being take up residence in my mind.
She shrugged.
At least he pays rent. And I know why I felt like I've been missing a limb. If he's this pervasive, then no wonder I feel like I need him.
Nathan ruffled her hair, finding her annoyance cute. He pulled his hand back when he felt his palm begin to heat up. Why don't we take you somewhere else to exercise your new power? Nathan proposed. Like outside, before you try to light me on fire.
Why would I ever do that? Sen asked,
her smile too wide to be genuine. After quickly cleaning up the summoning circles and making sure to obliterate Ifrit's name from the floor, the two of them ventured out to the outer wall of the fortress. A large clearing lay to the south, away from the road and free of the forest surrounding it. Nathan suspected this area had been populated by the Empire at some point, relatively recently, or else the trees would have grown over the land by now. What spells do you know? Nathan asked.
Not many, Sen shrugged. Fourth-rank spells only. I know the 1/6th-rank spell, but only because it's super famous.
It's the Inferno Tornado, isn't it? Nathan asked. Sen nodded sheepishly. The Inferno Tornado was renowned as the spell of choice by the Bastion who founded the Kingdom of Falmir, back when they had split from the collapsing Anfang Empire. Many sorcerers learned the spell merely because of its historical significance. Also because creating a tornado made of fire was awesome. The nature of the spell meant you didn't even need the wind element, although very talented sorcerers combined the two elements anyway.
Well, don't use that one, Nathan said. I don't want to waste power from the binding stone to put out the forest fire you'll start.
Sen clicked her tongue and leaned against the crenellations of the wall.
So what? I use 4th-rank spells against champions?
Don't dismiss 4th-rank spells, Nathan warned. Despite the name, lower-rank spells will be your bread and butter for a while.
What about 2nd-rank? Nobody seems to use them.
Nathan held up a hand, and a blue line appeared between his fingers. 1st- and 2nd-rank spells are largely indistinguishable, save for the magic power in them. Common magic users rely on them, but actual sorcerers never go lower than 3rd-rank, unless you're in a pinch and need to brute force something.
Okay, but Sunstorm seemed immune to 3rd-rank spells. What about 4th-rank?
Sen pressed. That's where things get complicated. Nathan summoned a triangle over his palm. Third-rank spells are usually powerful enough and far more flexible than higher-rank spells. You can cast several at once. A triangle appeared over each finger in his hand, or supercharge the spell so that it's effectively one rank higher. The triangles vanished, and one appeared on either side of Nathan's hand.
And that works against champions?
Sen asked skeptically. Yes. You'll also have Ifrit's power to increase your spell effectiveness. Nathan lowered his hand, and the triangles vanished. The rule of thumb is to use fourth rank on champions, fifth rank on duo gems, and sixth rank on trigems. Some trigems will need higher ranks, though. The innate magic resistance of a champion is one thing, but some gems can make a champion immune to spells that aren't strong enough. Sen grimaced.
Trigems? You really think we're going to fight one soon?
No, but a duo gem? Maybe. And planning around gem abilities is always smart. Any champion with a sapphire is likely to have increased magic resistance. Nathan pointed at the clearing. Now, test out Ifrit's power.
Are you sure I can't use the Inferno Tornado? Sen asked.
Don't even think about it, Nathan said. Sen winced and rubbed at one of her ears.
You and Ifrit said the same thing at the same time.
She smirked at Nathan and left her remaining thoughts unvoiced. He knew what she was going to say anyway. Pointing at the clearing, Nathan waited for Sen to obey. She straightened up, held both hands out, and summoned a pair of red squares into her hands. Moments later, the clearing exploded. A spiral of flames gushed into the air. When the smoke and dust cleared, a blackened crater had replaced the clearing.
Oh, Sen said. Okay, that's way more powerful than what I could do before. I can only imagine how powerful my tornado is.
Don't get cocky, Nathan warned. Casting higher rank spells and supercharging takes longer. In battle,
seconds kill, Sen said. Ifrit's lecturing me about my focus and how long I take to cast spells. Urgh. Getting used to this will take a while.
She blinked, then gave Nathan a sidelong look.
Nathan, can I ask you a question? Ifrit's refusing to answer.
That didn't bode well. Despite his misgivings, Nathan said, sure.
How does this work when we have sex? Sen asked. Does Ifrit feel you inside me as well? Does that mean you're technically having sex with Ifrit as well?
Nathan stared at Sen. Then he placed his palm over his face and groaned. All of his worries had been for nothing. The possession hadn't changed Sen one bit. Chapter 21. A few days later, Nathan found himself helping Faye to prepare for her gemming ceremony. At least, that's what he told himself. Faye moaned and mewled in his lap. He moved the comb slowly, gently, and deliberately, so as to not hurt her. Her body quivered against him. Her tail continued to move, despite his persistent reminders to Faye that she had to stay still. The scent in the air was the least arousing thing about this situation, and it was pure arousal. Faye wore only her underwear, as she always did when getting her tail and ears groomed. Her nearly naked body rubbed up against Nathan's. She definitely felt his erection. In his old timeline, the next step when Faye got this aroused would involve no clothing. This Faye didn't seem to pay much attention to Nathan's arousal. If she did, he wouldn't be able to control himself. Not that he wanted to. Faye had been his lover in his timeline, and he planned to take her when she was ready.
How are you so good at this? She gasped out after he finished.
During the grooming session, forming actual words was impossible for her. She continued to lie across his lap, curled up tightly against him. Her newly fluffed tail tickled Nathan's nose as it swished back and forth. Holding back was hard for Nathan. Faye pressed her bare stomach against his crotch. but she didn't react or comment on it. Until she showed open interest in him sexually, he'd hold back. Let her go at her own pace, he told himself. He really hoped that her pace moved as fast as the rest of her. I've had some practice, Nathan said, blowing off her question again. Faye looked up at him, her eyes glazed over and fluffy ears twitching curiously.
Did you have another beastkin that you groomed before me?
Ruffling her hair, Nathan initially didn't answer, but Faye continued to stare at him, her gaze growing clearer and more penetrating. The movements of her tail slowed until only the tip swayed back and forth beneath his chin.
You don't have any competition, Faye, Nathan said eventually. You're the only beastkin in my life right now.
Her ears perked up, and her tail resumed its usual movements, but her expression darkened, and she laid her head on the bed.
I'm not so sure that means I don't have competition, Nathan, Faye complained.
What do you mean by that? Nathan asked, although he had a strong suspicion as to who she was referring to.
Faye sat up. She gave Nathan a sidelong glance, as if to ask him, are you serious? Then she straightened up in his lap and faced him. Her face sat only inches away from his chest, and he was reminded of her petite stature. If he leaned forward, he could easily sweep her up in a kiss. Her legs rubbed against his hips as she curled them around his back. Her crotch rubbed against his, and he really questioned if she was acting innocently. He held in a groan as she pressed herself against him and tucked her head beneath his neck. Her cat ears flicked at his chin.
That was it, he decided.
A knock sounded at the door.
Nathan, are you ready? Faye's not in her room, so I'm guessing she went ahead, Vera said.
Faye sprung to her feet, eyes wide.
Oh no, I forgot that I need to get all dressed up.
The beastkin shot around the room and gathered up her uniform and armor. Nathan had gone ahead and brought her things here while she showered earlier.
You're taking this too seriously, Nathan said.
Faye stuck her tongue out at him. Or maybe she stuck it out because she was struggling to slip into her breastplate. He walked up behind her and helped her do up the clasps and tighten it around her hefty bust. Vera knocked again, then opened the door. She blinked at the sight of Nathan helping Faye into her uniform.
We're almost ready, Faye said, face red.
Vera sniffed the air, then turned her head to the side. I'll wait outside. The door closed. Faye turned her head, then sniffed the air. After several attempts, she appeared to find the smell she was looking for. Her face lit up. Then she glared at Nathan and let out a pout.
You can smell me, can't you? Faye demanded to know.
It's hard not to. You do this every grooming session, Nathan said.
She blinked.
Wow, so I should shower after grooming?
What would be the point of grooming you if you immediately mess up your tail again?
Nathan sighed. Let's get you changed, then we'll head out and begin the gemming ceremony. Faye remained in a sour mood until they left Nathan's bedroom and scowled at Vera when she stepped outside.
Interrupted something, did I? Vera asked, a smirk on her lips.
Faye didn't answer. She strode ahead of Nathan and Vera. After a couple of corridors, the beastkin fell back into step with Nathan. Vera exchanged glances with him. The three of them walked together for some time in silence.
Are you sure this will work?
Faye asked, her eyes flicking between the floor and Nathan.
No gemming ceremony is ever guaranteed to succeed, Nathan said.
Faye's ears flattened against her head. He continued,
but I think you are ready. You've acclimated to the power of the binding stone extremely fast. Plus, the first gem is always the easiest one. A well-trained champion can often be gemmed within their first few months.
You talk as if you've done it, Vera said.
If we're going to be sent off on our own, we need to know what we're going to do, Nathan responded.
Truthfully, he really shouldn't know this. At least, not in the Empire. In his homeland of Falmir, Bastions went through an apprenticeship for a few years before being posted independently. The Empire eschewed this system and preferred to use its vaunted academies to train both Bastions and Champions. The upside of the academies was that they could quickly assess and train a large number of candidates in a relatively standardized way. The Empire had the largest proportion of Beastkin champions for this reason, as most nations didn't have the infrastructure to train them from nothing. The downside was that Bastions gained little hands-on experience during their training. In Nathan's implanted memories, he recalled a few brief postings with Bastions and some excursions, but little else. By contrast, he gained a wealth of experience during his apprenticeship in his original timeline in the Kingdom of Falmir. Because of this, this posting would normally be death for a new Bastion. An enemy nation actively attempting to start a war and unleash a demonic invasion? It was a difficult situation for somebody with experience, let alone for a greenhorn. Fortunately, Nathan had a lot up his sleeve. The keep's rear courtyard welcomed the trio. Nathan led them to an enclosed spot. Herbs cascaded down from planters, and vines twisted along trellises. The cooks used this little patch to help feed the keep. "Any reason we're getting in touch with nature?" Vera asked. "This isn't what I'd call nature," Nathan said. "And no, having more room for Faye to move is good, however." He pulled a pouch from his pocket and pulled the gemstones from it. Faye licked her lips when she saw the three glittering rocks.
"I get to choose?" she asked hesitantly.
"Along with your final enhancement," Nathan confirmed. "Whatever you decide on now, you will be stuck with for the rest of your life. There is no going back after this point. As part of this ceremony, I will implant the gem into your collarbone, and its magic will run through your body forever."
Faye nodded. "I'm ready. Which should I pick? I know you went for the amethyst first."
She gave him an odd look. "That would have been my first choice if you had your original speed enhancement," Nathan explained. "Amethysts provide their champions with greatly enhanced strength, martial ability, and raw power. You would be able to move like the wind and cut through a mountain."
Faye's eyes widened. Her fingers twitched. Was she thinking about Tarako again? The nine-tailed fox who could slash 9 times at once? "And the others?" Faye asked quietly.
"Diamonds are flexible. However you want to boost your physical abilities, a diamond can do it. That's why they're the most common gem for physical fighters."
"Common," Faye repeated. She sounded disappointed.
"Because a diamond can do anything. You can make yourself strong enough to slice through an inch of enchanted steel with your first gem, immune to pain with your second gem, and gain the ability to sweep aside entire companies of soldiers with your third," Nathan explained. He left out that the diamond was the jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none gem. It did anything almost any physically focused gem did, but slightly worse. An amethyst hit harder. A sapphire provided more powerful abilities. A topaz broke the sound barrier. But a diamond could do all of those things. The exception was durability. The defensive abilities of diamonds were second to none. Immunity to pain. Resilience to powerful blows. Barrier projection for the champion and their allies. Removal of the need to eat or sleep. Nathan doubted that Faye was interested in durability, however.
"But lots of champions have diamonds, don't they?" Faye asked.
Vera interrupted. "I don't think you should pick your gem based on what others are using. Shouldn't it be about what you want and what suits you best?" Faye nodded slowly, but her tail stopped moving and she twisted her hands together. Had she always been so sensitive about this sort of thing, Nathan wondered. "There's also the sapphire," Nathan said. Faye's ears pricked up. "Although it's typically used for spellblade champions and a certain type of sorcerer, there's nothing to say that you can't use it."
But I can't use sorcery. Or any magic at all," Faye said.
"The gem will take care of that." Nathan waved off her concern. Sapphires are entirely concerned about gem abilities. That is, granting you magical abilities on top of what you can already do. Common examples for physical fighters are to wreath their sword in flames, to become immune to or even counter weaker magic, or even short-range instant teleportation.
Fae's eyes widened.
Eh? I could do that sort of thing?
The cost is that sapphires don't increase your physical abilities directly. Amethysts and diamonds strengthen your body, on top of your enhancement. But gem abilities have to be activated and used, and they also drain your gem's power reserves faster. That Federation champion was probably running low when she ran away.
Oh, is that why she appeared weaker than I thought?
Fae bit her lip.
So she could control shadows, but wasn't as physically powerful?
That's right. An onyx is an odd gem choice for a champion. Better suited for an assassin than a frontline fighter.
Nathan saw Faye's concern growing and added,
But a sapphire is different. Think of it as a way to become a spellblade without learning sorcery.
Faye nodded, but remained silent.
She stared at the three gemstones in Nathan's hand. Her full attention was on them.
If only I could test out one gem and change later, Faye muttered.
Unfortunately, there's no known way to do that, Nathan said. And no way was ever discovered in the future. I'll leave the three gems here. Maybe you'll feel something from them.
I haven't over the past few days, Faye said.
Well, maybe today's different.
Not that Nathan believed in that. He had always suspected that the idea of champions feeling their future through a gemstone was because their bastion rigged the gem to react to their touch and trick them. None of his champions had ever responded to them. After placing the gems on a nearby table, Nathan took a short walk with Vera.
Have you activated your gateway yet? He asked.
Leopold said he'd send me the catalysts, but they haven't arrived yet, Vera said. Not that I know where I'll connect it to. You're rather close to my tower, and I don't know if Bastion Leopold's fortresses will be able to send reinforcements.
Better to be connected to something rather than nothing, Nathan said.
Vera nodded.
Are you sure you should leave her to decide by herself?
Vera asked, changing the subject.
It's her future, and she knows her abilities as well as anyone, Nathan said.
Maybe. She sounded doubtful. But you're her bastion. She looks to you for guidance. Even the slightest nudge toward the amethyst, and she'll take it. Don't pretend you don't want her to take it.
Honestly, Nathan wanted her to choose the amethyst and to change her enhancement back to the speed one, but he couldn't explain why. He knew that Fae made for an amazing champion with amethysts, but she had clearly performed better with her current enhancement. Shouldn't that prove that he needs to push her down an alternative path? Was he blinded by his knowledge of the future? Nathan held no knowledge about the path not taken by Fae. Would she turn out stronger with a new gem? Or would this be a horrible mistake? If he hadn't seen Sen's personality shift in this new timeline, he wouldn't hesitate to push the amethyst on Fae. But Sen's changes showed that whatever was happening was for the better. She exuded a level of confidence that Nathan found delightful, and her sorcery improved at a rapid pace. Maybe Fae could choose a different path as well, and things would be fine. Sen was doing well. Maybe Fae would as well.
I don't know, Nathan admitted. Based purely on what I know about her past, I wanted the amethyst. But champions change as they gain experience. I wouldn't push her into picking her gem this fast if a demonic invasion weren't on the horizon.
She'll grow into it, won't she?
Sure, but what other futures am I closing off?
Nathan shook his head.
I'm beginning to realize that the world is far more complex than I've given credit for. There's no singular path in life, no predestined future set out by the goddess.
Vera's eyebrow shot up.
Those are bold words for a bastion. Borderline heresy, I know. Nathan chuckled darkly. But if the goddess didn't want us to protect the world ourselves and find our own path, would she have left us alone here?
Vera remained silent. She walked with Nathan for a time.
Maybe, she said. But what if you know what your future should be? Or what somebody else's future should be? Is it right to deny it because of your feelings about what is the right thing or allowing choice? What if everybody ends up on the wrong path because of that?
Nathan's mind whirred. He considered her words.
Are there wrong paths? Nathan answered.
He shook his head. He knew of at least one.
I don't know. I have a future that I'm working toward. I don't need everybody to be part of that, and they're free to do whatever they want. Right and wrong don't enter into it.
So you'd trample over somebody else's future in order to preserve your own? Vera asked.
I'm a bastion. That's my entire duty in life, Nathan said wryly. The Federation wants to take land from the Empire, and I'm here to stop them. The demons want something. I'm stopping them. I kill bandits and enemy champions. My job is not a nice one.
You sound more confused than I am, Vera muttered.
Nathan laughed.
Long and hard. How long had it been since he laughed like this, he wondered.
Vera looked at him oddly, as did several of the nearby guards.
Sorry, but you're right. Can you blame me? My life has changed a lot recently, he said, wiping tears from his eyes.
I suppose, she sighed. You lost everything before you came here, didn't you? Effectively a count, denied your inheritance by your father, despite being the rightful heir, and now a bastion. I can see where you're coming from.
The two of them returned to the small garden where Faye stood with a single gem in her hand. It glittered bright blue in the sun. A sapphire.
You've decided? Nathan asked, just to be sure.
I have.
May I ask how?
Faye nodded.
I don't just want to be strong or fast or tough. I want to be an amazing warrior who can defeat her enemies no matter what they're like. You've been so amazing in battle with your sorcery, Nathan. How could I not want to have even a sliver of that? And when I get 3 gems, I'll be able to show you things beyond your wildest dreams.
She grinned broadly, showing her fangs. Holding in a grimace, Nathan nodded. He didn't know how to feel.
I'll read your mind during the ritual to determine the ability you gain from the gem, he explained. For later gems, you'll be able to choose, but we don't know how your body will react. So concentrate on the sort of ability you want, and that can help guide me and the Binding Stone's power.
Her tail swished violently behind her, and Faye nodded several times. Nathan ruffled her hair and heard her giggle when he brushed the inside of her ears. When she calmed down, he placed the sapphire against her collarbone. It didn't sink in. Faye gasped as the stone touched her skin. A small slit had been cut into her uniform and armor to make way for the gem. Nathan reached into his mind and channeled the Binding Stone. He began the ritual. The sapphire exploded in brilliant, bright blue light, nearly blinding Nathan. Slowly, it sank into Faye's chest. She let out rasping gasps, but remained still. The process was very painful. Other champions compared it to being stabbed very slowly. Eventually, the blue stone sat flush with Faye's collarbone and skin. Her eyes were wide and almost entirely white. She stared into nothing, and he braced her with his free arm. She looked up at him and nodded. Diving into her mind, he found it as welcoming as usual, if a little panicked. He took it slow, allowing her to calm down. Eventually, he found her core. A satellite of power hung around it, and Nathan felt the tether from it to the Binding Stone. She was connected to the Binding Stone, and from it to him. She was his. The champion to bastion connection was now permanent, until death parted them. At any moment, he could feel her life and mind, understand her state of being,
He'd never learned how, but supposedly some bastions could read the minds and emotions of their champions. The proof of this was in what he was about to do. For now, he had a job to do. He reached out for the satellite of power that the gem had installed into her mind. The moment he touched it, Faye's emotions and desires poured into him. His mind instinctively filtered out those not related to the gem. Although he noted some from earlier that were distinctly related to him and the things she wanted to do to him, he now knew that she was very, very interested in him. Damn. Ignoring that, he tuned the sapphire. What felt like hours passed. Faye's desire nudged at him, as did the reaction of her mind when he changed it in certain ways. The first gemming ceremony was always the hardest. The binding stone was implanting its power into the champion. It needed to take root, and if the wrong gem was selected or the wrong ability tuned to the champion, then the ceremony would fail. Nathan knew how to abort a failed ceremony, but the results could be catastrophic. Champions died from failed ceremonies, their minds turning to mush. Even successful ceremonies had dire consequences due to poor tuning. Nathan had met his fair share of champions who obeyed their bastions like slaves, and who were incapable of ever becoming duo-gem champions or even using their single gem properly. Most nations stripped bastions of their position for a failed ceremony or for successful ceremonies that damaged the champion's mind. Those rules had changed after the war had begun, but the Empire currently stuck to them. Not that Nathan had any intention of ever doing this to any champion. Finally, he pulled away from Faye's mind. Her thoughts poured over him, and she seemed fine. Nathan looked down at her in reality. She looked exhausted. Only minutes had passed. The sapphire shined from its place in her chest. She smiled at him.
"So, what can I do?" she asked.
"Let's go over that another day," Nathan said. He ruffled her hair. "For now, you need some rest."
"Can you groom me again?"
she asked dreamily. Her head leaned against his chest. Those desires from earlier washed over him. He cleared his throat, looked away, and then said, "Of course." He carried her back to her room, and she dozed. Vera accompanied them, looking thoughtful. "I told you there wasn't much to see," Nathan told Vera.
"Maybe, but it still satisfied my curiosity," she said.
He shrugged and let her wander off. Vera was due to return to her tower within the next few days. Letting her see a gemming ceremony wasn't a big deal, given how little there was to see. Everything took place in the mental world. Faye still seemed clean, so Nathan stripped her down and groomed her. She giggled at his touch, and the room filled with her scent as usual. "Faye," he said. His hand slipped along her taut ass. She let out a sigh and looked up at him. Her face exuded ecstasy. His hand drifted lower. Her tongue slipped out of her mouth, and she moaned. Then her hand gripped his.
"No, not yet," she mumbled.
"We both know you want this," he said.
"I do," she said, "but there's something I want to do first."
"Which is?" he asked.
She smiled. Her body shifted until she sat up in his lap, her mouth next to his ear. He could feel her body pressing against his. She whispered, "In this next battle, I'll prove that I'm worthy of being your mate."
Chapter 22. The sky in the portal turned black the night of the invasion. Scouts reported back within minutes, their shouting echoing throughout the walls of the keep. Nathan stirred. The noises from outside of his room boded poorly. His head lifted from the pillow, and he stared into the darkness of his room while he waited for his eyes to adjust. Sen moaned below him. She turned in her sleep and rubbed against his naked chest. The door nearly blew open when Faye knocked on it. Nathan saw its hinges visibly move.
Nathan, Faye shouted. Wake up! Something's wrong with the portal!
She pushed the door open, and Nathan received a reminder of why locking his door was pointless. Faye's inhuman strength didn't give a damn about how good the steel was, or how complex a lock the door had. She pushed the door, and it opened. A shame about the frame.
Nathan! She shouted again.
Then she pouted when she saw him in bed with Sen.
I'm awake, Nathan said.
So am I, Sen said. Goddess, Faye, are you trying to wake the dead?
Faye didn't say anything, instead choosing to glare at Sen. The beastkin took several seconds to regain her composure and flick on the lights, by which point both Sen and Nathan were up and getting changed.
The sky in the portal went dark, Faye explained.
Nathan clicked his tongue.
That means the demons are about to invade through the portal. Gather all the soldiers and officers, Faye, and tell Kuda to send a message to Vera. Maybe she's set up her gateway and can bring reinforcements from Leopold.
Faye obediently ducked off. Sen returned to her room to finish getting ready once she slipped some clothes on. Unwilling to waste time freshening up, Nathan threw on his uniform and rushed to the portal. The doors were wide open. A dozen soldiers guarded them on this side. They saluted Nathan when he approached and allowed him in. Returning the salute, he entered the portal. Nathan had been busy preparing for the invasion since Leopold's visit. The portal was no longer a barren wasteland. Immediately on the other side, a half-dozen automaton hoplites reacted to Nathan's entry. They recognized their creator and deactivated again, lowering their spears. A palisade wall surrounded this side of the gate. Bulky machines sat atop the wall, pointing outward. Small ballista bolts, each about the length of Nathan's leg, bristled from the machines. Dozens more bolts hid within the machines. These were repeater ballistae, powered by the binding stone, each capable of firing a bolt every few seconds. They operated automatically. Even their ammunition was replenished by the binding stone. The interior gate opened, and Nathan walked through. Over 100 soldiers milled about here. Another palisade lay farther down the valley and blocked off further descent toward the portal itself. More automaton hoplites stood guard near the wall, and more ballistae defended the wall. Soldiers attended to a few catapults, each of which had automatically refilling ammunition stockpiles. Looking up, Nathan confirmed that the sky was now pitch black. Below him, the light creeping out from the cracks in the ground had turned a bright white. Portals didn't always show physical changes such as this before an invasion, but they were a clear sign of overflowing demonic energy. This world was being changed by the energy building up within it. Once they suppressed the invasion, the sky would become red again, and the light from the cracks would return to normal. Nathan considered himself lucky that his first invasion came with such obvious warning signs. While he could read the level of demonic energy flowing from the portal, at best he could only guesstimate when the invasion would happen. The monitoring devices that made accurate observation possible were yet to be invented, and Nathan didn't understand them well enough to recreate them. He was a bastion, not a magical scientist or inventor. Nobody stood atop the outer palisade. Nathan looked down the valley from the central gatehouse, which was the highest point of the wall. Behind him were his soldiers and summons. Ditches, low-standing wooden barricades, and barbed stakes lined the descent to the bottom of the clearing. Down there was the beginning of the demonic invasion. Dozens of demons crowded around the craggy rocks near the portal. Every minute or so, another would slowly fade into existence. At first, each demon appeared colorless and fuzzy, but they regained their form over the course of 10 seconds or so. They would look at their bestial hands and arms, feel their face and body. Then they would pull a weapon of some form out of thin air and join their brethren.
"Shouldn't we be clearing them out?" Sen asked.
She wandered up next to him.
Ordinarily, yes, but I don't know when the portal will tear itself open. If one of us is down there when it happens, we'd be overwhelmed in seconds. Nathan shook his head. 100 demons or so is nothing compared to what will come.
You're really boosting my morale, Sen remarked.
She had adjusted her uniform since joining him. In place of the cloak and rough bandit armor was a black and silver champion's uniform and a red coat that fell to her thighs. Her breastplate gleamed and stuck out noticeably less than Faye's. A thin strip of tanned skin peeked out at him between her leather skirt and armored greaves. When he didn't respond to her, Sen made another remark.
I expected there to be bigger walls here and more summons. Kind of surprised how lightly you're taking this.
I'm not taking it lightly. Nathan pointed to the sky. In case you haven't noticed, this isn't our world. Building anything in here requires a lot more power from the Binding Stone. Given I don't know how big the invasion will be, I need to keep a stock of power in reserve for my sorcery.
He shrugged.
Besides, unless I build the walls large enough, the demons will jump right over them.
Oh, so how do we fight them?
To make it clear, we fight them.
Nathan gestured to the two of them and grimaced at the soldiers massing below them.
They'll die if they fight the demons, won't they?
Sen asked, staring out at Anna's soldiers.
In droves. They don't have the training or equipment.
With enough time, I'll turn them into knights capable of going toe-to-toe with demons. But for the most part, it's smarter to use summons, Nathan explained. Sen watched the soldiers prepare the catapults and ballistae for the coming invasion, while Nathan remained silent. Those soldiers who weren't manning siege weapons carried halberds. Not a single bow was in sight.
What if they break through? Sen asked.
The soldiers pull back, and we fight the demons where they are, Nathan said.
Sen gave him a look of disbelief.
That's why I have power in reserve. I can create more summons if necessary.
They watched for several long minutes. Demons continued to mass below them. Preparations continued. Faye joined them. Kuda was trying to contact Vera, but having little success. The sapphire in Faye's collarbone glimmered in the soft light of the world around them. Nathan tapped into the ley lines and confirmed that they were not disrupted anymore.
That doesn't bode well, he muttered.
Do we need to do anything? Faye asked.
Nathan called up a soldier and gave them an order. Tell Kuda that the ley lines aren't disrupted. He'll know what to do.
Sir, the soldier snapped out, then ducked out of the portal.
You have a plan for this? Sen asked.
Precautions, mostly. Kuda's fairly sharp.
Sharp doesn't begin to cut it, Sen muttered. The man doesn't need a knife to cut steak. He can use his mind.
By the time 200 demons had gathered in the clearing, something began to happen. The air above the mound of rocks seemed to distort. Nathan saw black cracks form in midair, and strange gases appeared.
Don't look directly at it, Nathan muttered.
You've told us 1,000 times, Faye said.
The world roared, and a 10-meter-high hole in the world snapped open. Nathan shifted his gaze slightly to the right. Despite this, a sharp pain built up behind his eyes, and he was forced to look away completely. He grabbed Faye and physically turned her head away. She whined, but he had seen her ears flatten and knew she had ignored him. The portal had opened, a tear in space that slowly oscillated between black and white, shaped like a teardrop. Bestial yelling resounded across the valley, bouncing off the cliffs. The demonic horde poured in.
I didn't think it would hurt this much, Sen said, covering her eyes.
It shouldn't normally.
Nathan bit his lip and glanced back, covering one eye. The horde wasn't that large, maybe 500 or 600 at most. More would arrive in time, but this was in line with expectations. but a portal that caused this harsh of a migraine usually came with a larger horde. In fact, they usually came with a messenger. Nathan grimaced. Surely one wouldn't arrive this early. Kadria had dismissed his concerns, stating that no messenger would waste their time on such a small feast. He didn't point out the fact she seemed pretty focused on feasting on a particular part of him. Nathan raised an arm. A hush fell over the soldiers behind him. They could see the portal and hear the demons, but not see them. They waited for Nathan's order.
All forces, fire at will!
Chapter 23. Boulders tumbled overhead, barely visible against the darkness of the sky. They slammed into the approaching horde. The demons kept charging uphill, even as dozens of them were crushed beneath the tumbling rocks. Their war cries grew in intensity. More demons collapsed on the front lines, ballista bolts sticking out from their chests and heads. Their brethren trampled them. The automaton ballistae let out an endless series of thunks and plinks as they fired their stream of bolts. Their mechanisms whirred noisily as they reloaded. Larger ballista bolts soared over the wall and into the enemy, spearing several demons at once.
"More of them!" Sin gasped.
Another mass of demons spilled out of the portal. The tear in reality fluctuated wildly, but emitted no light onto the volcanic rocks surrounding it. The new demons wasted no time in summoning their weapons and joining the reckless charge toward the keep.
"Don't worry about their reinforcements. Just cast," Nathan said. "Faye, pick a group of demons and stall them, but don't let them surround you."
"Eh? I can charge into that?"
Faye pointed between herself and the hundreds of demons still unharmed by the onslaught of catapults and ballistae. "They're only regular demons. You're a monogem champion now. Take your sapphire out for a whirl." Nathan ruffled her hair. She stared at him for several moments. Then her tail talked once. She nodded and leaped down from the wall. Her reckless charge toward the demons kicked up a trail of dust. Next to Nathan, Sen ignored Faye and instead focused on her spellcasting. A pair of triangles hovered in front of her palms. Two massive orbs of fire appeared in front of each hand, each as wide as Nathan was tall. No, not fire. Lava. The surfaces of the orbs swam with molten rock, and their interiors were more liquid than fiery. Sen pumped her arms back and forth in a single motion and let out a "Ha!" The orbs of lava flew across the battlefield. Flames burst out from where they landed, and demons exploded into fiery glory. The lava orbs bounced. A trail of lava dripped from them, igniting demons below the orbs. With each bounce, more demons melted and collapsed to the ground as a pile of burning ash. The beasts fled from the lava oozing along the ground, fearing it. Their charge split along the path of each orb and faltered briefly. Boulders crashed into them. More demons went down. For a few brief moments, the demonic assault stumbled. Then a roar went up from the rear lines. It rippled along the horde. Soon all the demons waved their weapons in the air, their mouths wide open and bellowing their strange language. They charged forward. Sen held a fist in the air. A pair of squares glowed around it. She cast her fist down. A meteor turned half of the demons into a smoking crater. Bodies flew. Many of them crashed into the cliffs, and some were speared on jagged rocks. Some demons tried to crawl from the crater, their body still working despite missing limbs or entire chunks of flesh. Hundreds more demons spilled forth from the portal, replacing the losses almost instantly.
"Is this normal?" Sen asked.
She held her hands together, a single square appearing in front of her.
"Look at how many you're blowing apart," Nathan said. "If this wasn't normal, do you think we'd need Tri-Gem or Duo-Gem champions?"
Sen grimaced.
"Goddess! How long will this go on for?"
"This wave? Maybe 15 minutes. The whole invasion? Hopefully just two waves.
Maybe three, Nathan replied. He didn't mention that this portal felt wrong to him. The actual demonic assault had yet to surprise him, but he disliked the intensity of the portal itself. Sen's spell activated, and a jet of flame gushed forth. Every demon it touched melted, their bodies blackening instantly.
I can't believe how little magic resistance they have, Sen mumbled.
I told you that lower rank spells would be your bread and butter. Stick to them. You'll need to do this for a while. On the left flank, Fei made contact with her prey. She grinned and drew her scimitar. The demons screeched at her. A moment later, their screeches transformed into screams of panic and pain. Blue flames ate at their flesh, armor, and weapons. Fei darted into the mob of beasts, cutting a path through the hulking monsters. Those same blue flames wreathed her scimitar and coated her entire body. When her sword touched a demon, it melted its flesh as if it were butter. Molten droplets of red and black goo pooled on the ground behind Fei. The demons collapsed into pieces. The flames around her body melted weapons before they struck her. Fists and entire arms liquefied like candle wax. Fei spun through the demons at top speed, whirling around with her sword. Her eyes glimmered, and she suppressed an obvious desire to laugh. Nathan watched as the demons recoiled in fear. They tried to give her a wide berth, but she danced up to them in the blink of an eye. The entire left flank became her playground. The panicking demons barely noticed the boulders and ballista bolts raining down on them. Hopefully, she didn't get in over her head. She was using her flames at full intensity. Every swing of her scimitar sent embers flying across the battlefield that could turn a demon into a candle. She was effectively invincible against demons this week. But the moment she ran out of power in her gem, she'd be crushed by the horde within moments. Nathan surveyed the battlefield. The demon slowly pushed forward, despite his efforts. Countless more monsters pressed the hesitant front ranks forward, like lemmings pushing their brethren over a cliff and to their deaths. Except these lemmings might have enough numbers to fill in the chasm beneath the cliff with corpses, thereby making the cliff safe. The demonic horde appeared to be limitless in number. Leaping over the wall, Nathan drew his sword. A green square shimmered over his hand. He slashed the air. 100 meters away, the front rank of demons was sliced in two. Those behind shoved the dismembered bodies out of the way. They charged forward, their bestial faces twisted in fury. Nathan darted forward. His sword and free hand glowed. The demon stood only meters in front of him. He flung his hands out and unleashed two blasts of wind. Armor shattered, horns crumbled, faces fell in on themselves, and a mass of demons crashed into one another. Despite the show of power, Nathan quickly found himself surrounded. The demons kept their distance, but shuffled around him in a circle. Explosions and bursts of flame disintegrated masses of demons nearby, and blue fire licked up in the distance. Holding his fist up, Nathan cast a supercharged fourth-rank spell. The demons stared at his upraised hand for a moment, then they bellowed and charged. Did they even understand what he was doing? Nathan didn't know or care. Before they reached him, he unleashed his spell by opening his fist into a palm. Countless blades of wind turned every demon close to him into a gory mess. Nathan lowered his hand and scanned the battlefield. Nothing had changed, he realized. More and more demons poured forward. He needed a better way to hold them off. Fei would run out of power soon, and Sen was burning too much power too quickly. If the demons broke through in two places at once, or they overwhelmed someone, this invasion would become a disaster quickly. Given Nathan worried about a nasty surprise coming later, he wanted to hold off on using the Binding Stone's power for as long as possible. With a flick of his wrist, he propelled himself toward Fei with a gust of wind. His landing was rough, and he tumbled across the rough, broken ground. A jet of blue fire crashed over him. Fei screamed, "Nathan!" He waved off her concern. The fire clung to him and felt tingly,
but didn't harm him.
Gem abilities like yours can't hurt their own bastion. Calm down, he said.
Faye stared at Nathan in shock, the flames dying down around her body. Behind her, the demon saw an opening and charged forward. Clicking his tongue, Nathan darted forward. His sword shined and blew apart several demons with a gale thrust. Faye turned and melted several others, then pulled Nathan behind her.
It's dangerous, she said.
Her flames pushed the demons away.
Why are you out here?
Nathan gave her a look, but held his tongue. He was her bastion, not a random soldier. Did she think he was going to collapse because a mere demon got a single hit in? Instead, he said,
I want to pull back and try something else.
He cast a supercharged fourth-rank spell, but held on to it.
But I'm doing fine, Faye protested.
Demonic screeching cut off whatever else Faye was going to say. She threw an annoyed look at the intruders before panic emerged on her face. The approaching horde was larger than before and had spread out while the pair had been distracted. Nathan swung his sword at the ground between himself and the charging demons. Thunder rang out, and the ground shuddered. A chasm burst into existence. White light blinded Nathan as the chasm reached down to whatever lay beneath this world. The demons tried to halt their charge, but their momentum was too great. Dozens of demons fell into the chasm. The light prevented Nathan from seeing what happened to them. From experience, he knew that he wouldn't see them again.
Let's go, Nathan said, grabbing Faye's hand.
She stared at him in shock and followed behind him for a few steps. The ground shook again, and the chasm began to close. Demons screamed as they were crushed between the walls of earth. Nathan and Faye didn't watch. By the time they leaped on top of the wall and rejoined Sen, the demons had already forgotten what had happened. Not forgotten, Nathan reminded himself. The demons who saw the chasm were probably dead. Almost every one of the hundreds of beasts charging the wall was a newly spawned demon. The portal had spat them all forth in the time it took for the chasm to swallow the hundreds of their brethren.
Faye, stay still for a second, Nathan said.
He placed a finger against her sapphire and pushed power into it from